Welcome to the Litflix podcast, episode 9. We are books, movies, booze. So we read a book, watch a movie, have some drinks, and talk about it. Our episodes are explicit and they do contain spoilers. I'm Casey.
I'm Abby.
Tonight's episode is Dumplin' by Julie Murphy, published in 2015, along with the 2018 film on Netflix by the same name. Stay tuned at the end of our episode because we have a promo for a fantastic podcast, Sisterly History. Tonight, I am drinking basically an Arnold Palmer with sweet tea vodka. And I love it so much. Like, I have a serious problem with sweet tea vodka. This one time we went camping and I drank a whole bottle in a day and a half. My husband asked me if I was an alcoholic.
Rightfully so.
Like, I really have an issue. It's so good.
You have a problem.
I try not to buy it because I drink it so fast.
I mean, it's dangerous.
It really is.
I had never had it before, but I luckily was able to find it at my store, and it is so fucking good.
What did you mix yours with?
Okay, I took your advice. Well, I don't know if I took your advice. I have it. So I got the Seagram's sweet tea vodka, and I mixed it with Gold Peak sweet tea, just the refrigerated kind, and Simply Lemonade.
Delicious.
What's your rate? What are your ratios?
Sometimes I do half and half, sometimes like 3/4 tea. Why are you giving me that look?
Oh.
What did you do?
A third vodka, a third tea, a third lemonade.
Okay. I was just talking about like my ratio for tea to lemonade.
Oh, okay.
And then I do like 1 to 2 shots of vodka in there.
Nice. It's perfect.
It doesn't taste like it really just tastes like iced tea and lemonade.
It's a problem.
It really is a problem.
Yeah. It's pretty sweet, but I really, really like it. Do you use sweet tea?
Sometimes I use sweet tea. Sometimes I just brew some black tea.
Because that's like a big thing in the South, whether or not you have sweet tea or just iced tea.
Yes. Sometimes I love sweet tea, but I also try not to drink that much sugar.
Yeah.
So I have a sugar addiction.
Well, sweet tea is like, that's the way I do it.
It's basically crack, though.
It's so fucking good.
It's so good.
So okay. Fucking good.
All right. Are you ready for the author?
Did we talk about what book we're doing?
Yes.
Oh, okay. She's Southern. That's why we picked this drink, by the way, in case nobody knows.
And the book takes place in Texas.
Right.
And there's a part in the book that talks about a big thing about making your tea versus powder.
Oh, yeah. Tea. And that shit is passed down. Those recipes are passed down generation to generation. It's a big deal.
Anyway, let's see. Julie Murphy was born November 8th, 1985.
What?
So that makes her 33 years old.
Yep.
She was born in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and she currently lives in Fort Worth, Texas with her husband, her dog, and her cats who, quote unquote, tolerate her.
What the fuck? I thought she was a Texan through and through.
Nope.
I was born in Texas.
Were you?
Yep, Corpus Christi.
Wow. Yep. I was born at the same hospital your son was.
Oh, that's so cute.
That is in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, it's just weird that you lived in one place your whole life, most of your life.
Yeah, crazy.
Weird. Anyway, go ahead.
I took this from her bio. When she's not writing, she can be found reading, traveling, or hunting down the perfect slice of pizza. Before writing full time, she held numerous jobs such as wedding dress consultant, failed barista, and ultimately librarian.
I would love to be a barista and a librarian.
I would love to be a librarian. I was a barista for many years.
Didn't you drink a lot of coffee?
I drank so much coffee.
Yeah.
That's probably why I'm so short.
There's an episode of Bob's Burgers where Tina gets addicted to espresso. And she asks if she can just bite down on a bean.
Oh my gosh. Chocolate covered coffee beans are delicious.
So good.
She is the number one New York Times bestselling author of the books Side Effects May Vary, Dumplin', Ramona Blue, and Puddin', which Puddin' is the, I guess, sequel to Dumplin', and it focuses on the secondary characters.
You're saying it wrong.
What am I saying?
You said Puddin'. It's Puddin'.
Puddin'. Okay. Puddin'.
Puddin'. I'm splitting hairs. Go ahead.
It's a sequel to Dumplin' and it focuses on the secondary characters.
Okay.
She wrote her first novel, Side Effects May Vary, during a National Novel Writing Month while working as a librarian.
NaNoWriMo. That's November.
And she also has a cameo at the very end of this movie.
I was going to bring that up at the end.
Okay.
I did see that.
I caught it this time.
Good job.
Thank you. Disney originally optioned the film rights for this movie before it ended up on Netflix.
Huh.
And I didn't write it down for this. One time we will have to discuss how and what Netflix actually does for their originals.
Yeah, I don't understand any of that.
This is also another episode where the book is of our show, where the book is written by a woman, the screenplay was adapted by a woman, and the film is directed by a woman, and I think it fits this movie very well.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I'm very happy that we are covering more episodes with women because I think it's important.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think, you know, anything to support women is great.
Agreed.
Kristen Hahn wrote the screenplay. From what I could tell, she only has one other writing credit on IMDb, which was a 1997 documentary.
What in the fuck?
Yeah. But she has co-produced many films such as The Departed and The Time Traveler's Wife.
Oh, okay. So just not a writing credit.
Right. She has one more in post-production right now. I don't remember what it was.
Okay.
Anne Fletcher is the director. She has also directed films such as Step Up, 27 Dresses, The Proposal, and Hot Pursuit.
Oh my God, that makes so much sense.
Yes. She has done other films, but those were the ones that really stood out to me.
Okay.
So the film stars Australian Danielle McDonald as Willow Dean.
I did not know she was Australian.
Yes, Jennifer Aniston as her mother, Rosie, and Jennifer Aniston also produced this movie and even got Dolly Parton to write some new songs for the soundtrack.
I didn't listen to the soundtrack, did you?
No.
Okay. I do like Dolly Parton, but I didn't know that.
Odeya Rush plays Ellen. Maddie Bleo is Millie. She was also in Hairspray Live.
Oh, that's why I know her face. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was like, she seems familiar.
Bex Taylor Kloss is Hannah. You might know her from The Killing.
Oh, I was wondering where I knew her face from, too.
And the adorable Luke Benward plays Beau.
He's real cute.
He is from the Disney Channel.
Yep.
All right.
He's got really hairy arms.
He does.
But it was fine. I enjoyed
it. I actually like it.
I liked it too.
I have no problem with body hair on other people.
Me either. It was funny though, because when I first saw him, I was picturing like a Chris Hemsworth for some reason. I don't know why. Like more blonde and like a jaw that could just like fucking cut a Sunday roast. But that's not what I got. And so when I first saw him, I was like, he is cute at best. And then as we went on, I was like, oh, he's real cute.
He's real cute.
Real cute.
I saw something. It was either an article. It was on his Twitter. He like retweeted something that said Beau and Peter Kavinsky could be friends.
Aww.
And I actually would love for them to hang out.
They would be so cute together.
I would really like that. I ship that.
I ship that too. I was just thinking, never mind. I was just going to say, I wouldn't mind seeing them kiss.
I wouldn't mind them being a couple. I ship Beau and Peter.
Totally. Please tell me Beau is over 18. The actor, I mean.
Let me try.
Because we just had a huge conversation about not being a predator. I don't want to be a predator.
Shit. Hold on.
Okay. I'm sure he's probably like 37.
Because people have an issue with casting. Probably because of thirsty old women like us.
They're like, we can't do this to this poor child.
He was born in 1995.
Is he 24 then?
May 12th, 1995.
So he's 23.
Yes, almost 24.
Okay. I don't feel so gross.
I did read he is in this movie Cloud Nine with Dove Cameron, and she plays Becca. Oh. And she's also in Hairspray Live.
Okay.
So there's a little
connection.
6 degrees or whatever you want to call it.
It's like 1 degree, but okay.
Well, I mean,
like, I get it.
Okay, like the whole 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever. Anyway,
okay,
they're all like intermixed in Hollywood.
Basically, she just took everybody from Hairspray and was like plopped down in this movie.
Well, I guess as soon as she saw her in Hairspray, she wrote like she has to be in this movie.
Oh, neat.
Which I really loved her in this movie.
Becca?
No, Millie.
Oh. I thought you said Becca was in Hairspray, too.
Yeah, she is.
Oh, they both are. Oh. Yeah, I loved Maddie, her in this movie also.
Okay, Maddie Baleo. It's B-A-I-L-L-I-O.
Bio?
I don't know.
Maddie B.
Anyway, I like her a lot in this movie. Okay. I want to see her in more. I thought she was great.
Yeah. I actually wrote in my notes, love Millie.
Mm-hmm.
Exclamation mark.
Yes. Okay. Do you want to dive in? Maybe I should explain. We're going to do things a little bit differently in this episode. We're going to do a really short plot and then just kind of discuss the book and the movie.
Yeah.
Instead of having a really in-depth plot.
Yeah, because the plot is like
really straightforward.
Super straightforward. Just get ready. Here we go. Are you ready?
Yep.
Self-proclaimed fat girl Willadine Dixon, dubbed Dumplin' by her former beauty queen mom, has always been at home in her own skin. Her thoughts on having the ultimate bikini body? Put a bikini on your body. Fuck yes. With her all-American beauty best friend, Ellen, by her side, things have always worked. Until Will takes a job at Harpy's, the local fast food joint. There she meets private school Beau, a hot former jock. Will isn't surprised to find herself attracted to Beau, but she is surprised when he seems to like her back. Instead of finding new heights of self-assurance in her relationship with Beau, Will starts to doubt herself. So she sets out to take back her confidence by doing the most horrifying thing she can imagine, entering the Miss Clover City beauty pageant, along with several other unlikely candidates, to show the world that she deserves to be up there as much as any Twiggy girl does. Along the way, she'll shock the hell out of Clover City and maybe herself most of all. Synopsis complete.
All right.
That wasn't too bad. I didn't slur horribly.
Okay.
That's what happened in the book.
So let's chat about it.
Okay. Do you have anything to start with?
Yes, I do. The book opens with a beautiful Dolly Parton quote, "Find out who you are and do it on purpose."
Nothing sums up life better than that quote.
I think it's such a great, like, it's such great advice no matter what your age.
Exactly. And you can do it at any point in your life.
I found myself stopping to question if I know who I am and if I'm doing it on purpose.
Ooh, I get that. Yeah, totally.
I don't have an answer to it yet.
You do, and you are.
Okay.
Questions answered.
Okay, thanks for being my life coach.
You're welcome.
But I do... Like, I still struggle with, like, who am I? Do you not? Like, you know exactly who you are.
I wouldn't say I know exactly who I am, but I would say that at my current age, I feel like the things that I used to try to change about my personality, I've started to accept and work.
Oh, 100%.
And work with instead of work against. And I also do try to live my life in a more intentional way.
Yeah.
So like I check in with myself a lot, like, is this getting me where I want to go? Do I want to be doing mm-hmm. this today? And the answer isn't always yes, but it's always like, in general, yes.
I feel like there's things of myself I kind of used to hide. And especially since the podcast, I'm like, here I am. This is me. Like me or don't.
Yep.
I don't care.
Yeah. Like I used to be, I wouldn't say ashamed that I'm such a big horror fan, but okay. I was definitely in the closet about it.
I love comics and nerdy things. And I used to never talk about that. And now I'm like, so what?
Well, that's just fucking weird.
Well, part of me like questions myself because there's such a big like nerdom now and it's cool to be open and nerdy and whatever. So I'm like, am I just a follower?
No.
Am I just accepting this? Like, even though I've always liked it, am I more open because it's more acceptable?
Well, yeah. That's the thing. So like, I've always loved horror movies and I never like would outwardly say that's my favorite genre because I felt like people would think that I was a freak. But then I found this podcast called Night of the Living Podcast. I was like, oh my God, these people talk about crazy ass shit and they watch bad movies and good movies and they just sit around and talk about it. And that's their thing. And I'm like, that's my thing too. I fucking love that shit. And now it's like cool. And it makes me happy. I think
the great thing about social media, like it definitely has its downsides, but one of the great things is you can surround yourself with people like you, and even though you felt so isolated before,
mm-hmm.
like you don't have to,
right?
Like there's other people who are your weird out there.
Exactly.
And it's so much more easy to connect with it. Like I have a deep secret love of romance novels, but there's like a whole community that loves them,
right? And they're just like you.
Yeah. And so being able to connect with people on things that maybe you love, but you don't know anyone else is such a great freeing thing.
Exactly. Like
you're not so weird and isolated.
Right.
So I think that, I mean, that's a great thing social media does.
That's absolutely true. And it's funny that we bring this up because that's exactly how Willadine became best friends with Ellen, was through their, well, Will's Aunt Lucy loved Dolly Parton.
And Ellen's mom is a Dolly Parton impersonator.
Exactly. And so the two got those two girls together.
Yes. There is a quote later in the book. I was going to ask you how you felt about it.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember her saying it's a Dolly Parton quote. I think in the movie, they say that Dolly writes them back. It says, "The greatest friends have nothing and everything in common." And do you think that's true?
I think that's 100% true. And I remember that in the movie sticking with me.
Okay. Why do you think that's true?
Because you can be totally different people, but this love of whatever, just a deep love of one thing can connect you so deeply that even though your lives are different, you just connect on that level, I guess. Does that make sense?
It does. I think you and I have differences, but we have so many similarities that sometimes it's like we're the same person.
Yeah. Are we weird, though?
I don't know. So that was the whole thing where they have everything and nothing in common. I was like, well, I don't know.
Isn't that kind of the case with all people, though? You have everything and nothing in common.
I mean, there's certain people I have extra nothing in common
with. Like Beyonce.
Sure. Okay. Like Beyonce.
Yeah, I have extra nothing in common with her too.
Like I have extra nothing in common. So I guess that's where you have to add that and everything.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I don't remember if in the book she says it's a Dolly Parton quote, but I know the movie says Dolly wrote it to the girls.
Yeah, I don't remember that from the book at all.
I remember her saying it in the book, but I don't remember if they addressed where it came from.
What about that quote from the drag queen where they're like, go big or go home, but do it in red shoes?
I don't remember that in the book at all.
And it's the blandest fucking saying I've ever heard in my life.
Yes. Did you have something to open with?
I was just going to say, we meet Lucy in the beginning of the movie, and I don't think we discussed this in this very succinct synopsis, but Lucy dies of a massive heart attack, correct?
Yes.
She's extremely overweight and...
I have this written down. In the film, she's not nearly as fat as she is in the book. In the book, she's 495 pounds.
I had that also written down. However, I did realize, are all of our shots of Lucy flashbacks?
Probably.
I think that's why. Yeah. Okay. Because I was like, they did not do a good job on that. But then I realized we're looking back on it from Will's memory.
I get it.
So we meet Lucy in the beginning of the movie, and that opening scene was great. I loved it. I loved how they shot it. I loved the music, how soft it was, and how, like, you could feel like you were in a memory, basically. And I really liked it.
It's beautifully filmed.
Yeah. And I loved that Will was in the back seat singing along to the radio. And that's the kind of memories kids have from a kid's perspective.
Yes. I also loved that, like, watching it, you can feel her love for Lucy.
Yeah, like that warm feeling.
Yeah, you felt it. It was, I don't know, an all-consuming feeling.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a really great job with that.
That was my favorite part of the movie, and then I hated the rest of it.
Oh.
So, I just wanted to let you know now.
Oh.
Oh my God, did I offend you? I'm so sorry. Are you okay?
I'm not offended. I'm like trying to process this information.
Okay.
Huh.
Yeah, the flashbacks were the only part of the movie I liked.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
You don't have to be sorry.
I feel so bad.
Why?
Because I don't know. I just feel guilty.
You don't have to feel guilty. Everyone likes something different.
Okay.
I'm going to say that...
I don't think you're okay.
I am okay. I'm trying to process, and I'm going to save it for a little bit later. I have a lot to talk about until then, and I'm sure you do too.
I have some stuff, yeah.
I did want to talk about that, the whole Lucy thing. And I'm all for body positivity and acceptance, but I think there is a point that it's simply unhealthy and you're killing yourself.
Right.
And this might be controversial.
I'm going to get controversial too. Don't worry.
Okay. I struggled at times with Will's relationship with her mom, Rosie. And there's times that I understand Rosie doesn't come across correctly, but I truly believe that she's trying to look out for Will.
Oh, 100%. I agree.
And you want your child to be healthy, happy, and have an easy life. And no one wants to watch their child suffer, be bullied, or have their health suffer.
Right.
And after literally watching your sister eat herself to death, that has to be, like, that has to weigh on her. Get it?
Did you do that on purpose?
I did.
Okay. That was amazing.
That was my intention.
This is why you're my best friend. Okay. Puns for life.
Pun. You're so punny.
No, I totally agree. And I have really, really, really mixed feelings about that part of the book.
I did too.
We meet Will, and her whole thing with her mom comes down to just meet me where I'm at. Accept me for who I am in this moment right now, all of me as is.
Right.
And that is great. And we never talk about, like, secret eating or binging or eating disorders or any of that. No. But I don't think anybody is born obese. So there's obviously something going on. There is a problem that needs to be addressed. However, I do like the message of meeting someone where they're at.
That's the other thing. I believe that people at different weights are still healthy. Like, we can all be 5'3", and maybe you're healthy at 110 pounds, and someone's a healthy 175 pounds.
Right, like, yeah.
Different people's bodies are naturally different weights.
Agreed.
That's life.
Yes.
However, there comes a point when your health suffers, and when eating disorders, whether it be anorexia or binge eating,
right,
you can go both ways here.
Yeah.
Come into play.
Right.
Like if I wanted to get down to 110 pounds, which according to my height I could weigh, I would have to not eat. My body does not function at that weight.
I don't even want to know what I would look like at 110 pounds.
That is sickly for me, but someone of my same height is perfectly healthy and naturally that.
Right.
And that's fine.
Right.
I'm just saying that there's a point where it's unhealthy to be either overweight or underweight. And I think that's where you have to kind of struggle as a mom.
Yeah, because it's she feels like she's Lucy is like Will looking into the future, basically.
Right. And she watched her sister die and she doesn't want her child to take the same path.
Yeah.
The other thing, Rosie talks about she lost all the weight before high school.
Yeah.
And she's always on these crazy diets. And I don't think that's healthy either.
No. Yeah. And especially as you age, holding on to a weight that you were in high school is fucking stupid. Your body's going to really change as you grow older. So
I don't expect to look like what I looked at like at 16.
No, I wish that's I did, insane. Though. Anyway,
I felt like Rosie was kind of made out to be like she just didn't accept or love Will because she was overweight. And I don't think that's it.
I think. Okay. And this is actually, I think, relates to what you're saying, is that Will comes across really, really, especially in the book at the beginning, very pragmatic. Like she's firmly knows who she is. She doesn't lie to herself about being thin or any of that stuff. She doesn't try to hide it too much, her body. Like she'll go to the pool and whatever. It's like uncomfortable, but she does it and she deals with it.
Right.
But she also has this very judgy, bitchy way of projecting her own insecurities onto other people.
100%. And she introduces herself. I wrote this down. She says, "Hi, I'm Will. I do blah, blah, blah. And I'm the resident fat girl." And she says, "Fat's not an insult. It's just part of who she is. And that's the first thing people notice about her."
But how does she know that, right?
Like, I don't know how I feel about that statement. Like, if you're super skinny, I wouldn't say, "Hi, I'm Casey. I'm the resident skinny girl."
Exactly. Yeah.
So
it's projecting.
I didn't know how I felt about that. And she judges the thinner girls harshly. And it kind of comes back to her at the end with Ellen.
Yeah, she really does. Because Ellen even says, she's like, okay, so there's this whole thing with her making out with Bo, and Will has a really hard time when Bo runs his hand down her back because she knows he can feel the rolls. And I think every single woman in the world is aware of how they feel underneath a man's or underneath another person's fingers.
I wrote it down that I think it's such a universal feeling, and I think every person, man or woman on this planet has at least one spot on their body that they are self-conscious about.
Probably, yeah.
And it really shakes her. And I kept thinking in my head, does this change with age or with comfort? And do you grow out of this? Or do you just accept it with your person?
Ooh, good question.
Like, I don't think anyone on this planet is perfectly happy with everything on their body.
That's true, but we do need to address that it is more...
There's more pressure on women.
Yes. Especially the whole dad bod, mom bod thing, like, all of that. I agree. And that's the thing, too, is that Will is a total bitch in the movie. Like, in the beginning, she's a bitch. And in the book, it doesn't come off quite like that because all of that is internal dialogue that she's not saying to other people.
The other thing in the movie, Ellen's friend, Callie, is not mean. Will is awful to her. And in the book, she's a much bigger bitch.
Yeah, she is a bitch in the book. Agreed. One thing I liked about the book, this is considered a YA novel, right?
Yes.
Okay. One thing I really loved in the book is the dialogue felt so realistic to me. Like, I think that's one thing that novelists have a really hard time with is getting dialogue to sound right, especially coming from the male perspective. Like, mm-hmm. in To All the Boys I Loved Before, I felt like the dialogue mm-hmm. was a little bit like what a teenage girl would write about a teenage boy, not what a teenage boy would actually say. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that all of the dialogue in this book felt like real people speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that was that Beau barely spoke in the book. But God, yeah. he was so hot in the book. Like, in my mind, he was so hot.
I love him.
I love him too. And Beau, can you get a sexier name than that? Beau. And you just imagine his, like, sporty muscles underneath his Hardee's t-shirt or whatever the fuck. Where did they work? Harpo's? Harpies?
Harpies.
Harpies. Harpo is Oprah's company. He works for Oprah. Anyway, with his sucker in his mouth.
With his red sucker.
Oh, my God. So hot.
She has this moment with Beau where she's justifying his actions.
His actions?
Yeah, how... They're not really a secret, but she feels like he's keeping her a secret, and she feels like she doesn't deserve to be treated that way. But at the same time, well, she's saying Ellen wouldn't deserve to be treated that way, and she says this is how every girl has ever been played, because the rules apply to every situation except your own.
Oh, yeah.
And I really felt like that's such a true statement. Like, I feel like so much of this book is so honest and real. Like, I really uh-huh. connected with it.
I did, too. I connected a lot to the book.
Me, too. And I feel like I could give you a million pieces of advice, but if I was in the same situation, I'd be like, nope, it's different.
Yeah, you'd be like, no, he's an asshole or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy for me to tell you not to be treated that way, but it's different for me. Like, this isn't actually happening. This isn't actually the rules in my life.
Right, exactly. Because you can feel those feelings.
Right. I really liked it.
I liked it too.
The part that really, like, hurt my heart for Willadine was that she thinks Beau is the high point in her life and she's a lapse in judgment in his.
Oh, God. That was heartbreaking.
And we missed out so much on any of this in the movie. Beau is so very underdeveloped in the film.
Yeah.
He's such a deep, rich character in the novel, and you get to see his family life. She goes to church with him. They have a whole summer fling.
Yeah.
I really missed out. I understand why it's not in the movie, but I think it really missed something in the movie.
There's a whole backstory to Beau about why he goes to private school and how he gets kicked out of private school, all of that.
His family, the death of his mom.
Yeah, he was a very rich character. And actually, that's something I'll say now. I was going to wait until the end, but I felt like that kind of describes this whole movie for me, is that all of these rich characters that were multidimensional just became completely flat in the movie. They were totally flat. Like, the dialogue fell flat. The characters were flat. Everything was flat. I felt like
they focused more on the female characters. Like, she has a whole relationship with the guy, Mitch.
That's gone.
They put more, like, they even cut one character, Amanda.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She's not in the film at all. I don't know what I'm going to say. They focus on those female characters, and I thought they did a pretty good job developing them. Like, I missed out on some of the stuff. Like, I think she developed such a real friendship with Hannah.
That in the book. Hannah was one of my biggest... Okay, so I loved Hannah in the book.
Me too.
I loved her. But here's the thing. I don't think she was out. She wasn't out in the book.
I mean, she's not out, like publicly. She comes out to
Will. And I think...
I don't think she's out. And what's interesting, I actually read on Julie Murphy's Instagram that she is openly bi, and she made a post that she feels like she's always coming out.
Oh.
I can find the exact quote.
That makes sense, because I've read a lot of things about queer people or gay people who, like, holding hands is in public is like the biggest deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that breaks my heart so much. And I hope that I just hope that my son grows up in a world where gay people holding hands doesn't have a second thought. Like, that would be amazing.
So this was on October 11th. she wrote, "Happy National Coming Out Day. I wrote a whole long and serious post about how I've never come out and I'm somehow always coming out. But instead, I'll just say you don't owe your coming out or identity to anyone. I love you all. Take it day by day, B.I. Get it? Get it? Love your neighborhood fat bi with dad jokes."
That's cute.
So I actually thought, like, I liked how she developed Hannah, and I thought maybe she could draw from experiences about being out but not being out.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but
Hannah was also the only obvious character that had any sort of, like, biracial.
Yeah, in the book, she's half Dominican.
Yeah.
And I thought that has to be really hard for a small town.
Yes,
in the South. For a small Texas town.
Right.
Like, she's so out of place in that town. I don't know how to say it. She's a biracial queer woman.
Yeah.
In a small football playing Texas town.
Beauty pageant town.
And I can't imagine what that life would be like.
With horse teeth. In the book, that's the other thing, is in the book, she was like, she had really bad teeth. I think that's why I felt like maybe Hannah in the movie didn't really capture Hannah from the book, because Hannah in the movie was almost militant in her feminism. She's
very down with the patriarchy.
Yeah, she was, you mean, not down with the patriarchy, but...
down. How did she say it? What was her
well,
chance?
Well, if you say down with the patriarchy, that's different than that's saying she's down with the patriarchy.
She wants to take the patriarchy down.
There you go.
I was trying to think of her chant.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but it was funny. That was like
it's
one of the
something, something the patriarchy's got to go.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
She wasn't like that out and proud in the book. And I thought that brought a lot of pain and depth to her character. That's what I mean when I say they were really flat in the movie. They were the same from beginning to end.
There is a piece at the end where in the book, Hannah brings maybe her girlfriend to the pageant to escort her. And they like so glossed over that in the movie.
Which is odd.
In the movie, she's the one wearing a tux. In the book, it's her date. And I thought this would be a big deal.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we're glossing over it to make it more like it's the norm. But it was a big fucking deal for Hannah.
Right. And I know what you're saying, because there's a point in the book where Will says, oh, I think Mitch's mom says to Mitch that she thinks that Will is really brave for entering the pageant. And Will thinks to herself, I don't want it to be brave. I want it to be normal.
Yeah. I wrote that and down, actually.
I love that part. But I think we're in our moment right now where doing these things is still brave. And so I think that when you gloss over them in a movie, it doesn't give them their due credit, especially in the South, especially in a white rural town. Because honestly, look at things that have happened in the past. It used to be physically dangerous. I mean, I'm sure it still is. These are big deals.
For all of the talk I had in to all the boys about not bringing up the race of her family,
oh, yeah.
I wanted their differences that. Because the whole point of this movie is to celebrate differences. I wanted them pronounced.
Yeah, that is a great way to describe it. And they were, but they weren't. Also, can we talk about how in the movie entering? Okay, so tell me if I'm wrong. In the book, entering the pageant was not vindictive. It was a tribute to her Aunt Lucy and to finish something that Lucy thought about starting and never did. It was to live a complete life and to make this something that was normal and to prove that girls like Will were deserving just like the thinner girls were. In the movie, it was completely vindictive and they talked about ruining it from the inside out.
Right. I have it.
That was never the point.
Let me find it. I have this quote written down because it girls that enter the pageant feel proud enough of themselves to say they deserve to compete, unflinching confidence.
Yeah.
And she wanted to be part of that. She wanted to feel like she also deserved that.
Right.
In the movie, I think they tried to get the point that she's doing it for Lucy, but it was also like an underhanded jab at her mom.
That was the only point I got, was the jab at her
mom. I thought finding Lucy's entry form was their kind of touchback to the novel.
But if you didn't read the book, I don't know. I just, it's lost, and it's not, it doesn't have the meaning that it did in the book. Also, can we talk about that Jennifer Aniston teaching the pageant workshop? She had the fucking cardigan draped over her shoulders.
I love her in this movie.
She was the best part of the movie. But like, are we ever going to get to a point in our lives where it's like, oh, I'm whatever age, it's that year, I've got to drape a cardigan over my shoulders. It's like Patricia from Split.
Yes. I was also watching Friends from College or whatever, and she has this coat draped over her shoulders. And I thought, at what age do you have to start draping things over your shoulders?
I don't know. And it's like such an easy step to just put your fucking arms through the holes. What the hell?
Like,
I don't understand. Just
your shoulders get cold. Your arms are like so hot and burning up. You're like, oh, my delicate bony shoulders.
It makes no fucking sense. I don't know. Maybe if she was just trying to look classier than she was.
I mean, she did.
Yeah, I loved her.
I loved her in this movie. I love everything about her in this movie.
Actually, in the movie, the only point at which I got a little misty-eyed or cared about anything anybody was saying was when it was like towards, it was in like the third act, where she was describing about how she entered the pageant and Lucy helped her get those sequins back on the dress that she bought from Goodwill. From Goodwill. And that winning or losing is all in the details. And that was the only part that I like actually felt any emotion other than anger.
I felt when Will is sitting in Lucy's little Dolly Parton room on her knees crying, and there's flashbacks to them dancing.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that part.
Did you feel at any point like that? Like when I first saw that room, I was like, this is what Buffalo Bill would have if he was a Dolly Parton fan. Like, this is a serial killer room.
That's amazing.
Nobody has a secret room with all this shit on
it. I do. It's all about Sahara in there.
Do you have sand on the floor and everything?
I have sand with pictures of
Penelope Cruz and Matthew McConaughey.
Steve Zahn. Is that even his name?
I think that's right. But then I realized, too, that that room kind of represented Lucy's double life.
Yeah.
And how it was all like compartmentalized for her, which is really sad. And it was amazing that Will was able to. Oh, you know what? I just realized. So Lucy totally compartmentalized that room off, and the Dolly Parton thing and the whole drag show thing. Mm-hmm. And Will was totally compartmentalizing Beau too.
That's true.
And having to go public. And that's when she says, if I have to choose between being miserable in private and being humiliated in public, I'm going to choose being miserable in private, just like Lucy did.
Yeah, I have a whole thing about this. She at one, I mean, that's totally right. She says, you stop your happiness, not your body. And I don't actually agree with this statement.
I agree with you.
Okay. I was going to say, like, I get what she's trying to say, but once you reach a certain size, there are limits and things that you simply cannot do, even if you want to.
True.
For example, Lucy couldn't/wouldn't get on the plane because of her size, yeah, even though she wanted to go to Dollywood so bad.
Right.
And I mean, technically, Will is stopping her happiness, but it's because of her body.
Right.
Like, by the end of Lucy's life, she wasn't even leaving the house. And I don't know if that's simply because she didn't want to or because she actually couldn't.
That's a good question.
But I don't agree with that at all. I don't think that, like, no matter your size, do whatever you want, because
there gets a point where you can't.
There gets a point where you physically cannot. Your body physically cannot handle this.
Exactly. And even if you're not aware of it too, that whole psychological component. So there's that phrase or that saying, hell is other people.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally about like projection. Your own fears become what people are going to think of you, even though you have no idea what people are really thinking. And so you live inside your own personal hell because you're projecting all these fears onto everybody else.
Yeah.
And so it's a physical thing and a mental thing. And if your body is something that isn't considered the ideal, those limitations are there, whether you want them there or not.
Right. I don't think that you can just think away your body's limitations either. Whether or not you are fat or thin or average, if you are the skinniest person ever, but you don't ever exercise, you can't just go climb a mountain. Like, your body physically right. can't do it. Like, if that would make you happy, right. like, no matter what it is, your body has limitations.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's like, oh, I want it so I can have it.
You have to be willing to do the work as a human.
Right. At times, I think your body can stop your happiness is what I'm getting to.
Agreed.
Okay. One thing I do want to talk about is the drag queens and the drag shows in this book and in this movie.
If you want to make a drag show boring, watch this movie, because this was not the drag shows I've seen.
I thought that them doing Jolene was great, and that song was stuck in my head for such a long time.
I love that song. There's a part in the book where she's like, everybody knows the song Jolene.
And it's true.
I fucking love that song.
Me too.
God.
I do want to mention that from what I found, and if my information is wrong, please let me know. All but one of the drag queens were actual drag queens.
That sounds right.
And the man that plays Lee, Harold Perrineo, is the only one that I uh-huh. believe isn't. And that role was actually originally offered to James Corden.
Oh, that would have been fun.
Which I think would have been kind of fun.
I thought Lee in the book was Asian. Was I totally wrong?
He is in the book.
Okay. Also, the guy who plays Lee was Mercutio in Romeo
yes,
and Juliet.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. And he cross-dresses in that movie, too.
I tried to look them all up individually. I think that's correct. And if it is, I'm very happy that they cast it this way. And this is the way it should be cast.
Yeah, I agree.
Hollywood, take note.
Yeah. I actually watched an interview with Julie Murphy just this afternoon, and she was saying one of her favorite moments on the set was, so they hired this drag queen who is a Dolly impersonator. Mm-hmm. So she looks so much like her when she's in drag that people think she's really Dolly Parton. And I guess at one point they thought Dolly Parton was going to show up to the set, and she had a scheduling conflict so she couldn't, but Jennifer Aniston showed up and thought this drag queen was Dolly
Parton. That's amazing.
Which is pretty cute.
That is cute. I read that even before this movie was like a thing and Jennifer Aniston approached her, Dolly Parton had this book. And she...
Oh, she did?
Yeah, and she said, like, writing the song, she felt, like, almost intimidated by it because there's, like, so much love upon her.
Oh, that's cute.
And I thought it was sweet.
That's really sweet. But yeah, I thought the drag shows were totally boring in this movie. I'm so sorry, everyone, but I didn't like
I liked
them. Maybe it was the music.
I don't know. The end a lot.
The end was good. Yeah, okay. The end was fine.
I don't know if, like, I have other things to say, but I kind of wanted to touch on her relationship with Mitch in the book.
Yeah, I'd like to touch on that as well.
So she has this entire relationship with a quote unquote fat guy named Mitch, and I don't mind him not being in the novel, in the movie.
Yeah.
So Mitch is like a really sweet guy, and mm-hmm. he's pretty perfect on paper, but there just is something missing between them. And I really related to this. Like, I have dated this guy.
Aww.
That he's so kind, maybe funny. He cares about you so much, but you never, like, there's never a spark. And yeah. you feel so bad about it. And I really liked that at this young age, she was open and honest with him by the end of the book.
Right. Yeah.
She definitely leads him on for a while.
For quite a while.
But I, like, I think it had to have been a really difficult thing to just flat out say, I like this hot guy, Bo.
I know, especially because Mitch is such a good person. Mitch is
so, such a good person. And
his family's amazing.
His family's great. His mom makes her a mom for homecoming, which I didn't know and I had to look up. It's a big Texas thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really liked that and I really related to that storyline. And I thought it helped Will grow as a person.
There's something he says in the book that resonated with me. And it, I'm pretty sure Peter Kavinsky says it, or one of the, oh no, Kitty says it in To All the Boys I've Loved Before. Sometimes half of doing something is pretending you can.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I totally 100% believe that. And it kind of calls back to the drag queens too, because it's like the show is everything. And once Will actually puts on the facade of a beauty queen, that's she becomes one.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to put on the show, you have to pretend, and that's when you can break out of your shell and really be who you are.
Fake it till you can make it.
Exactly.
That's what we're doing.
Till you are it. Faking it, baby.
Yeah. I thought Mitch added a great aspect or layer to the book.
Yes, I did too. And it was nice to see that she didn't have to settle for the first guy who liked her. If she didn't like him, she wasn't going to go for him. And that's pretty great.
Yes, I like that very much, that she can, just because you're fat, you don't have to settle.
Right.
Like, you still deserve that spark, that happiness, the romance.
Right.
The passion.
And I mean, I'm sure Mitch was perfectly romantically adequate.
He is. I'm
for
saying
somebody,
there,
for somebody else.
There's times that there's no spark between two people, and that's fine.
Right. That's totally fine. And so, yeah, that's Mitch. He wasn't in the movie.
No, he wasn't in the movie. Nobody gives a crap about Mitch.
Oh, poor Mitch. Okay.
Another piece of advice Will gets is, she gets it from one of the drag queens. It's that life, maybe Lee. It's that life is not a river and we are not all headed in the same direction.
Mm.
That's a good reminder for me. And I think I could use a reminder of that more often.
Oh, okay.
And I'm better about it now, but I think I really struggled with it growing up, where not a competition, but I look at other people's life and think, why am I not there?
The comparison.
Yeah.
Thing. It goes back to your social media thing where it does. If you follow the right people that are on your path, it doesn't make you feel bad.
Right. And I think that's a good reminder. We're not all headed the same direction, and this isn't the Bird Box River headed to the refuge.
Right, exactly. Everybody runs into some rapids now and then, but
we're all on different paths, and we don't all have to end at the same place.
Exactly.
And you end wherever you feel happy.
Right.
I appreciated that reminder.
Yeah, that's nice.
My last thing is that she, towards the end of the book, she is telling Bo that she can't be with him because of how she looks and what people will say about them.
Yeah.
And he says, Willa Dean Opal Dixon, you are beautiful. Fuck anyone who's ever made you feel anything less. And I'm so glad that they left this in the movie. And I think everyone needs a Bo. And if anyone treats you less than that statement, fuck them.
That's true. That was one part in that fight in the movie where Will's acting, or not Will, whatever the fuck her name is.
Danielle McDonald.
I liked her a lot in Bird Box.
Yes, she was.
I disliked her.
Olympia in Bird Box. Okay.
Yeah, I just felt like, I don't know what it was, if it was overacting, maybe, over gesticulating. I don't know. I just didn't buy it. Maybe I just didn't like the movie. I don't want to blame it on her, because I hated Kathy Najimy in this too, and I fucking love her.
Who? Oh!
Kathy Najimy.
She is married to the guy that was the MC of the pageant.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought she could do better, but okay. And what was with all that woodchuck stuff with Kathy Najimy and fucking Millie?
I don't know.
That's what pissed me off, is like the humor was so sparse, and when it was there, it wasn't even funny. Everything was completely flat. It was just, it sucked. Was that all you had? Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
The other one question I had, is it magic if you can see the wires?
If they wouldn't have turned on the lights, you wouldn't have seen the wires. Okay.
Disagree.
So that's a thing that I wish they would have left as the same as the book, because in the book she just does a drag show, basically.
Which was great.
She does Jolene.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Why didn't she do it in the movie?
I will say this. The part that I think the movie got better is Jennifer Aniston, Rosie. The
yes.
emotion she showed towards Will was yeah. fantastic. I did not feel that in the book. I didn't feel like she had a turnaround.
Yeah, with the dress at the end.
I guess.
She was crying.
Yeah. I just felt like in the movie it came through more.
I agree. She was happier in the
yes,
movie at the
exactly.
end. She was more joyful for Will.
In the movie, it's her idea that Will escorts Ellen because Tim is sick.
Yeah.
Where in the book, they do it as a surprise and she's kind of upset about it.
Yeah.
So props, Jennifer Aniston. I really love you in this movie.
Yeah, she did a
really
great
job. Because I'm sure you're
job.
Listening to our podcast today.
Right. I have one other thing, and this is my absolute favorite quote from the book. Like it hit me right in the heartstrings. Mm-hmm. Hannah was being, so at the sleepover, when they're getting ready for the pageant, it's right before the
pageant. There's a sleepover in the book.
Yeah, there's a sleepover in the book, and Hannah, Millie, Amanda, and Will are all there. And Hannah's being a total bitch like normal and saying something about the pageant is like the biggest. Oh, they're watching videos to study up mm-hmm. for the pageant.
Yeah.
Past pageants. And Hannah is like, it's really sad that this was probably the most important thing that these women did in their lives. And Millie pipes up and says, just because maybe these women have stayed here in Clover City or have become stay-at-home moms or cashiers doesn't mean you can deem their entire lives outside of the pageant a waste. And I was like, fuck yes. Mm-hmm. I've always thought about that because in all of these books and movies where you hear about, oh, I just want to get out of this town. Mm-hmm. That's all I need is just get out of this town. It's no fucking different anywhere else. Getting out of that town doesn't make you a different person. It just puts you in a different location.
Right.
What's important is what you do and who you are and how you affect the people around mm-hmm. you. And I fucking love Millie. She's so great. I love Hannah too, but I love that Millie brought this up. It was so wise beyond her years. And mm-hmm. she sees this light in people that's really amazing.
I want to be Millie. Like,
right? Like, so positive.
She came across as kind of, like, stupid and naive at times, and she's not. Mm-hmm.
No, she's incredibly wise.
She has such a great outlook on everything, and I think, like, the way she views other people is in the best light and not judgmental. She's not like Will.
She's, like, the opposite.
Like, she doesn't, there's not a black cloud over everyone like Hannah.
Yeah.
I really, really like her. And I think we could all be a little more like Millie and it would be a better world.
That's true.
And she's fat and she's so happy. Like, she doesn't let other people bring her down.
That's the thing, is when people treat her with cruelty, she returns it with kindness. And obviously not all situations can be met that way.
No.
But it's a really great to see a character behave that way, especially when you have Will and Hannah being like, ah, these skinny bitches.
I think if the next book is Millie, I'm going to read it.
I think I would probably read it. I really liked this book.
My final thoughts for this book. Yes, please. More of this. This is a great book. I actually also enjoy the film, unlike Abby. I feel like they stand perfectly on their own, and I highly recommend both of them. And I feel like no matter your age, there are some lessons in here that are either worth learning or worth remembering.
Okay. I really liked the book. It kept my attention. I loved all the characters, the humor, the general bitchiness. I felt like I related to their stories. I loved that a major point was not trying to change any of the characters or fix any of the characters, but for appreciating them where they are right now. I loved women supporting each other or learning to support each other. I loved the drag queens and Lucy's double life. I thought those were all really great things. I hated the movie. The scenes were too drawn out. The dialogue was flat. The characters weren't compelling. The humor was sparse. The flatness could have also come from the filming technique. I'm not sure. Overall, I just thought it was really boring. The only parts I liked were the flashbacks to Lucy, and I didn't think it was worth the 2 hours.
Ouch.
I do have a question for you, though, before we move on.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the story, I mean, pretty much all of the story revolved around Will not fitting in because of her weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we did talk about her weight, or the book did talk about her weight. I agree that representation for anybody that doesn't fit in is important. Mm-hmm. But do we need fat characters, or do we need characters who just happen to be fat? Does that question make sense to you?
Yeah.
And I think it goes, well, I think I have a thought, but I want to know what you think.
I think that until you normalize certain things, until there's more inclusivity, you have to have fat characters, queer characters, until mm-hmm. they can just be... Until it just is.
So we're in a moment in time right now where we're working through those things being brave and to them becoming normal.
That's how I feel. I don't know that that's right.
I agree.
I long for the day that the character just happens to be this thing and it's not a plot point.
Like it doesn't have to be a plot
right.
point.
Right. Yeah. But I do not believe that we are at that place in a society, in this world, we are not to that point.
Right.
So I still think it's a conversation.
I 100% agree. And I think this book is actually one step closer to that.
Yeah.
Because we didn't, I keep saying it over and over again, but I really liked it. I didn't think I liked it at first, but I did. The fact that we're not trying to put Will on a diet. Like, it's not about her struggle to lose weight.
No, what's interesting is, so I was thinking about this book and I was thinking about other books with plus size women. And I remember this book that I read probably 15 years ago. And it's Jemima J by Jane Green. And okay. I remember loving this book. Like, I don't remember everything about it. So last night I looked it up because I thought, oh, maybe I'll recommend it on the show. Like, whatever. But like I said, it's 15 years ago. I didn't realize uh-huh. that Jemima lost 100 pounds in 3 months to get her dream guy.
Ew.
And looking at that now, I have such a big issue with it.
That's fucked
and
up.
So I think until those books aren't written, yeah. we need these books.
I agree.
And like I said, okay, so when I read it, I was probably 19. And I loved it.
Thought you were 19.
It was a really popular book. Like, if you look, it's on the bestseller list. Jane Green has a ton of bestsellers, including Bookends, Mr. Maybe. Anyway.
Is she a romance writer?
Yes.
Okay, that's why I don't know who she
yeah,
is.
I think she's from London.
Okay.
So that brings me back to, like, until those books aren't bestsellers, these books need to be.
Yes. I 100% agree.
Okay. And looking back now, like, I see such huge issues with that.
And that was only 15 years ago.
Like, in my head, I don't remember seeing the issue with it then.
Yeah, because you were conditioned not to.
Right. And so, you know, more like this, please, until this isn't an issue.
Yeah, I really loved this book. I mean, okay, I need to stop saying I really loved X, Y, or Z mm-hmm. because it's so vague. Here's what I will say. I enjoyed this book. I would recommend it. It was a quick read for me. I never felt like I was bogged down by the reading, and I felt like the characters were really realistic.
On a scale of 1 to 5 whiskeys, how many do you give this?
I give this a solid 3.5 whiskeys.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's a great book.
That's what I needed to know.
Read the book. Don't watch the movie.
Read the book and watch the movie, and you don't have to all do right. both of them.
Right. But you do have to read the book.
I was actually surprised. I equally liked the book and the movie, and I separated them enough that I enjoyed them both.
That's good. Did you watch the movie first?
Yes.
That I'm afraid to do that because I don't want to be.
You don't want to be me?
I don't fucking want to be you. No, I don't want to be swayed, but I also, I'm always going to be disappointed though if I keep doing it this way. But here's my question, and tell me if this makes me a total poser as a bibliophile. I'm afraid that if I watch the movie first and I start reading the book and there's a slow point in the book, I won't be able to get past it because I already know what happens. That scares me. It terrifies me. I don't want to run into a speed bump that I can't get over.
Yeah, I don't want you to do that either. Please join us next Sunday for our episode of Lip Bits, where we'll talk about the other things we've read and watched along with any current events from the literary or and film world. If you're reading along with us, our next book is The Darkest Minds by Alexandra Bracken, along with the film by the same name that will be released in 2 weeks. And holler to us, our Netflix addiction affair is over. This is not streaming on Netflix.
Yes, finally.
It's not currently streaming on Netflix anyway.
It's not a Netflix quote-unquote original.
No, it is not.
There we go.
We would love to hear from you. You can find us on our website at thelitflixpodcast.com or email us at thelitflixpodcast@gmail.com. That's the LITFLIX podcast. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Goodreads book club. Please rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Cheers.
Hey everyone, we're Nicole
and Jackie,
the siblings behind the new podcast, Sisterly History.
It's a not-so-serious history podcast hosted by two sisters on a quest for knowledge.
It's a riot.
Every week, we take listeners along with us as we venture back in time to share ye old stories and forgotten tales, and hopefully teach each other something new.
You'll hear us brabble during trivia competitions that we call pop quizzes. And sometimes things get personal when we read your family history emails.
So join the merriment every Monday. Find us on Apple, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And be sure to follow us all across the social media kingdom at Sisterly History.
Let the quest begin.
Okay, bye.